I don't know if you all have seen the Safeco commercials that we're kind of basing kind of our theme of this series off. But the first time I saw one, I was like, wow, they are asking a really deep question. The gist of the commercials, if you haven't seen them, is the doorbell rings. They've got two or three different versions of this out. The doorbell rings and the person opens the door and there's a column, kind of like the ones we have sitting on the front porch, with a postcard on it that says what matters to you. And as they look at the postcard and they look at the column, they bring that column into their house, set it somewhere in their house, and then they begin to set things that really deeply matter to them on it. Things like photos of their kids or, a motorcycle or a car. You know, I mean, you know, it's just this image of this thing for them that is the most important thing that they have or that they own, what really matters to them. And the commercial, the gist of the commercial or the punchline is, whatever it is that matters to you, we will insure it. But I think they are tapping into something that's way bigger than insurance. And so for the next few weeks, we want to ask that question. We want to wrestle with the question, what really matters to you? Because I believe that the answer to that question is really the definition of what you worship. We're going to talk about worship. Worship's kind of one of those funny words that you don't walk around and talk to people and say, hey, how's your worship? What's going on with your worship? But we talk about it in church a lot. We need to define what that means and then connect it to what we do here. But the problem is that I think for a lot of us, we think of worship, we think of some guy with a goatee and a guitar singing a certain style of music, or, well, maybe not a goatee, maybe here it's, you know, longer hair and, a band behind them. And, but there's a certain style of music. And so, if you're part of, you know, if you've been in church, you'll think, how was your worship today? And if the music was good, you'll feel good about it. Or if the preacher had something cool to say, you'll think, well, worship was good. And, if the guy who speaks really messes things up and you're like, that didn't make sense at all. And the band didn't play the music I liked, or it wasn't the style I appreciated. We say, well, worship wasn't so good. Or maybe we think about worship, we think about, you know, bowing before something where there's a lot of candles and incense and kind of this, you know, little shrine. And, you know, there's this thing, we kind of rub the belly of this idol and that, you know, that people worship there. I want to expand the definition of worship to be something so much bigger than that, because I think in the Bible, when the Bible deals with the issue of worship, it is really taking us to something way deeper than a style of music or an experience at church. It is really speaking of a manner of life that acknowledges something so much bigger than myself. The basic definition of the word worship, it's an old English word that basically means to declare the value or the worth. It's actually worth-ship, to declare the value of something. And when I ask the question, what matters to you, what I'm ultimately saying is whatever I put on the top of that column, that is what I put the most value in. That is what I have the most, has the most meaning for me. That is what I invest the most of myself in. Really, that is what I worship. And so worship, we were created for worship. I believe that one of the definitions I read in my study for this was that worship was a flow or an outpouring, that God created us and we are created in such a way that our lives just exude what we value, and that there's literally a flow of life, literally that our lives have this sense of a flow just coming out from us, and that we can't stop that. It's just part of who we are. There is a flow to our being, and that flow goes towards something, and it is that flow of life, that manner of living which has this expression that demonstrates what is really of value to me. And so I came up with a little definition of my own that we're going to kind of use through this series to define worship. And that definition is this: that worship is the flow of life and lips whereby a person declares what is of supreme value. The flow of life and lips whereby a person declares what is of supreme value. I just really think in our lives there is this flow that this we just something exudes from us that points to what really is important. And it's this ongoing thing. Now, I'll be honest, it's sometimes my life flows to this, and sometimes it flows to this. But in the midst of us, there's a God who is so awesome and so beautiful and so wonderful that has called us to come to the point where the flow of our lives shows that he is of what is what of supreme value, importance, worth. But see, we worship something. There is something on my column. At every minute of, at every moment of every day, something is on the top of my column, so that when I ask the question, what really matters to you, what really matters to me, I may say with my lips one thing, but what really shows up in my life is something totally different. And what we want to do is we want to examine those things. We want to struggle with them and help you see, hey, what are the things that you really put on top of the column? I mean, we come in here and everybody give the good churchy answer. What's on top of your column? Oh, Jesus, of course. I'm a Christian. That's what I believe in. But the truth of the matter is, as John Calvin said, our heart is an idol factory. That we produce idols all the time. There is a flow of life, and there are things that are drawing us. And in a very real way, that river turns, that flow turns into something that instead of flowing to the one who created us and who deserves our worship and praise, there's a very real sense in which every day there's this tension for that flow to flow back into myself and just what I want, what I value, what I think is important. In our life, this flow of life, and I hope this is connected, I hope you understand what I'm saying, that there's this constant flow of life, but often for me, the flow of life ends up looking like the lazy river over here at Six Flags. You ever been on that? You jump on a lazy river and you get one of those big old giant inner tubes and you hop in and you know, these big blue inner tubes, you hop in and you kick your head back. And you know, if you get in that inner tube just right, which for some of you ladies is so easy. In fact, you have to worry about falling through it. I have to worry about hitting it and totally flipping over and looking like a beached whale. Totally different experience for a big guy. But if I can get on there just right, okay, you get the inner tube and you get your rear end, you know, where it's kind of just perfect in the inner tube. And then the flow just takes you and you just kind of start going. And if it's a good day, if it's not too terribly hot, but it's warm enough so I'm not cold and I don't have to carry Josiah on my belly because that, you know, you can't really relax with the little kid there. But if you can get, and you just kick back and I can almost fall asleep in that thing. It's just this experience, but here's the deal. It just goes around and around and around, and this flow just keeps coming back to itself. And there's really no purpose other than just pleasing me to the lazy river. And this is what I think happens in my life. I see it all the time. That God has created me for worship. I am made to have this flow towards something that I value supremely. I mean, it just exudes out of my life. But that flow just keeps coming back to myself. And I'm just in this cycle of moving around in circles. And here's what I do. I actually sometimes say, hey, God, here's my flow. Grab an inner tube and jump on. And my definition of what it means to sometimes to be a follower of Jesus is, I have my manner of life. I have the things that are important for me. God, you're welcome to jump in with me. And worship is when I come to the point, worship of God is when I come to the point that the flow of my life, the flow of my lips, acknowledge in a very real and constant way that I value Christ more than anything. Now, what we're going to do in this series is the first 3 weeks, this week, next week, and the week after that, we're going to talk about the objects of our worship. We're going to talk about the things that end up on the top of these poles here for us and how we look to Jesus ultimately to be the object of our worship. What do we do to put Jesus and to let our lives honor Jesus as the thing that matters most? Knowing that every day, even as a follower of Jesus, if you're here as a follower of Jesus, you've come to a point where you've given your life to Christ, but every day, man, there's things that are crying out for attention. There are things that are crying out for me to say, no, that's really the most important thing. And as a follower of Jesus, we're challenging this all the time. But if you're not a follower of Jesus, if you're just checking Christianity out and you're trying to figure out what this looks like and how this feels, in a very real way, you are in a stage of life where you're considering Jesus, but there are all kinds of other things that sit on top of that pillar, of that post. And in a very real way, you need to come to the point where you say, listen, I trust you. And so we're going to talk about what's on top of that pillar. And then the last 4 weeks of this series, this seven-week series, the last 4 weeks, we are then going to connect it to what we do on Sunday morning. Why do we do music? Why do I come up and preach? Why do we pray? Why do we do communion? And what is that all about? And we're going to start taking the elements of our worship, and we're going to explain why we do Sunday morning and how that connects to what you have on the top of your column. And what our goal is in that, and then how you can interact with that, how you respond to worship, how you listen to preaching, how you interact with communion, what is baptism, all those sorts of things are going to be the second half of this series as we continue to look at what's on top of our column. But then we say on Sunday morning, our goal is to bring us back to Jesus so that we're reminded that my heart's an idol factory. All right. And that's kind of where we're going to go. And this morning, we're very specifically starting with the opening question. What matters to you? And our kind of theme is that everybody worships. Everybody has this life flow. We're created that way. Your life, even right here, this moment, there is an exuding of in your thoughts, in your mind, in your heart of the things that matter most to you. And it is in the context of that in Exodus chapter 20 that God begins to speak in the lives of his people what we know of as the Ten Commandments. If you have your Bible, we're going to look at Exodus 20 this morning. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your row, we have Bibles for you. We'd love for you to pick one of those up, take that, read it this morning. We'll be on page, I think it's page 53 in that Bible. If you don't have a Bible that's yours at home, keep that. That is our gift to you. We would love for you to take those and give them away to friends as well. And so we're going to be looking at Exodus chapter 20 at the first two of the Ten Commandments. And the reason we're going to look at the first two is because I believe Martin Luther said this. Martin Luther said that all of the commandments are a fleshing out of the first two commandments. Everything else that's a commandment of the Bible goes back to what is my God? What is my object of worship? What is most important to me? And that all the other commandments, the other eight commandments and the rest of the 613 commandments of the Bible are a commentary on the first two. And so we're going to look at what is God getting at when he says no other gods? And what does that mean in my life? And how does that look? And then talk about idolatry and what are the idols in my life and that sort of thing. And so Exodus chapter 20, he begins with this. He says, "And God spoke all these words saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." This is what's going on. God is speaking to the Jewish, the Hebrew people. They had spent the last 400 years in slavery in Egypt. It was a hard slavery. It was a brutal slavery. And they had been looking to God, and it's like God just for 400 years was silent. God didn't show up. They struggled with what that meant. But then God raised up a man named Moses who became the leader, and God performed unbelievable miracles, both towards the Egyptians at bringing judgment because of their sin and their rebellion against God, but also to deliver God's people. And when he says, I brought you out of Egypt, I brought you out of slavery, I opened the door, he is reminding them of the great things that he has done. They were literally at the edge of this of the Red Sea, and they turned around, and here comes the armies of Pharaoh, and God parted the Red Sea, literally sent a wind that opened the sea, and they were able to cross through the middle of this sea on dry ground. And then he closed back up the sea to protect them. And what God is saying to them, he's saying, listen, the beginning point of worship, the beginning point of coming to the place where God is really what matters most, is that I have to see God for who he is. I have to see how great God truly is. One of our challenges as a church, one of my challenges as a person who stands up here and speaks to you every week, is that somehow I've got to get out of the way and let you see God. I've got to get out of the way somehow through standing in front. This is the way God has ordained the church to proclaim the good news of God and the good news of Jesus, is through preaching. But the goal in preaching is not that you will go home and say, wow, that was good. Mike did a good job. I like that. I'll talk about that more in a minute. But that's not really the goal. The goal is that somehow you will leave here with this view of a great God who is worthy of our worship. A God who acts in my life, a God who does great things, a God who is creator. And when I look at the stars, I'm just wowed at the glory of his creation. a God who came himself in the person of Jesus and took my place, bearing the wrath of God for me, and that I am awed, I am wowed. All of a sudden, I see God. All through the Bible, the heartbeat of worship always begins with having a proper view of God. Which what happens to us is the struggles of life, the busyness of the world, the things of this world, all the other stuff begin to cloud our vision. And it's almost like they block them off where it's like three or four layers deep and I can't really see past that. And one of the things that we hope to do in our worship, our singing, or the things we do is to remove the veil so that you really see God. Isaiah chapter 6, one of the great chapters of the Bible on worship. What happens, there's this guy who's a religious guy. He loves God. He's even done some writing and preaching for God. But all of a sudden, he's in the temple one day, and God gives him a vision where he literally sees God on the throne, high and exalted. There are angels flying all around the throne, just singing out, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty." And immediately as he sees this, he falls on his face before God in terror because he sees God for who he is. But God reaches down and cleanses him, touches his mouth, touches his life, and then calls him. And it's a beautiful picture of what happens when a person really sees their creator. If we can just help you see God on his throne, lifted up, glorified, exalted, and over all, in control of all, who is sovereign over all, and has been, you know, by coming in Jesus is the answer for all. God will draw our heart so that the things that we tend to put on the pillars go back to the place where they belong, which is secondary. And we will begin to say, you know, I, the flow of my life values God. The worship of my lips, it shows a value that he is the thing, the object of most worth in my life. And so God begins by telling these people, he says, listen, I'm the God who did these things. They had experiential knowledge of what he was talking about. They saw him act. And they feel his vastness. And he says, I'm the who brought you out of the house of slavery. Verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in water underneath the earth. For years I read this and I didn't understand what was going on here. I felt like God was almost being redundant. He says, have no gods, make no idols. And I kind of dealt with, well, isn't that kind of the same thing? If I have an idol, isn't that kind of my God? Isn't that kind of what's going on? And I think what God is doing is he's speaking to two different issues that flow from the same inner deal, inner problem, okay? When he says no other gods, we think, I'm a Christian, so I'm not a Buddhist, or I'm not a Muslim, or, I don't like serve, you know, the sun god, or the moon god, or all these different gods that are out there. And I think that's part of what he's talking about. He is saying, listen, don't worship other gods. Don't exalt other deities. But at the same time, and it looks like they're not getting me back there. Is it not recording? Is it working? All right. At the same time, I think there is a deeper issue here. Because when we talk about gods, we're really talking about something that is spiritual, that is metaphysical, that is beyond the realm of this world. And when he says, you know, don't have other gods, I think he's actually getting to what are the inner issues of our heart that we tend to exalt as the most important? What are the inner things in my life that I think, man, if my life could just be about this, I would be okay. If this could just work in my life. And so we seek things like, we might seek love, or we might think, you know, if I could just feel loved, we might seek affirmation. It might be that I, a person who is in a pursuit and they want power in their lives. And we create this object, this intangible, very real thing, but it's intangible, it's spiritual, that we say, listen, if I could just have this need met, if I can just have this issue solved, if I can just have this fear dealt with, my life will fall into order. In ancient times, these people, the ancient people, had all these fears and needs that were a part of their life, just like you and I have them. And what they would do is they would take their fear and their needs, these inner issues that they just were crying out for somebody or something to fill, and they created a God for it. So they would have this deep-seated fear that when they went out and they planted their crops, they'd come back 3, 4, 5 weeks and nothing would come up. That they would toil diligently and then it wouldn't rain. That the crops would grow, but then halfway through the year, locusts would show up and eat them all. That they'd get to the harvest and they would find that it was rotten. And so these are all fears that come from these deep-seated issues that consumed agrarian people. So what did they do? They created a sun god who would look down and shine on their crops. They created a god of the rain. They created a god of protection over the harvest. And they would have all these gods. But these gods were not, they weren't trying to come up with gods. They were creating an extension of themselves that could deal with their greatest fear and their greatest needs and their greatest struggles. And most of the time, these gods they would create what would be gods in their own image, the image of their culture, the image of who they were in some way, shape, or form, as they kind of pictured it and described the character and the being of these gods. And so you study these ancient cultures and what their gods are like, and these gods, basically, they are a personification of their fears and their needs that they turn around and make to look just like themselves. Study the Greek gods sometimes. There's a bajillion of them. But every Greek god speaks to a fear or a need of the heart and becomes a personification. But all the Greek gods just look just like all the Greeks. And so what happens is that the God is saying, listen, have no other gods. He's not just saying, listen, don't, you know, bow to the sun shrine or bow. He's saying, listen, there are needs and issues and fears and hurts and struggles of the human heart, but those can't be supreme. Because the minute I value the need of my heart greater than God, I begin to pursue and worship something different than the Creator. I do this all the time. I'm going to be real honest with you in a few minutes about how one of the areas that shows up in my life constantly, okay? That there are things, there are needs and issues. And I've been reading and studying and just living in this verse in Habakkuk where God has just messed my life up with it. Where he says, if the fig tree doesn't blossom, if there's no fruit on the vine, if the produce of the olive fails, if the fields yield no grain. Do you hear the the society I'm talking about that creates all these gods? If the fields yield no grain, he says, if the flocks cut off from the fold, if there's no cattle in the stall, I will still take joy in my God. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. He makes my feet like the feet of the deer, which is an interesting phrase because the feet of the deer, wherever the front feet hit, the back feet hit, that's what gives it stability. And it's almost like he's saying, listen, God is the front feet and he pulls me and sets my feet right where he's been. And then he says, and he makes me to trod, to stand on my high places. You look at that and go, what? My high places, what is that? Well, in ancient culture, they would go on top of a mountain and build a shrine to these gods. And that they were called the high places because they thought if they put them on mountains, maybe the gods would hear them better. And they would go and they'd worship these gods, the god of the rain, the god of protection for the armies, whatever it is, the gods that they created, they were an extension of their own needs. And they would go up on top of these high places, they would worship there. And what the text says is that when everything fails and nothing that I want to worship works out, I will take joy in God. My heart will rejoice in God. I will see him as seated on the throne. Because I know that even when I can't see where my feet are going down, he will put my feet where he's been, but then he will make me step and trample on the things that my heart wants to worship. It's a great text. And this is what's going on. God says to his people, listen, don't have other gods. Meaning, I know that you have these deep needs, these struggles of your heart. Trust me. Worship me. Don't value those over me, because you will start worshiping something different. So then what they would do is they would take this idea of a god, and they would start building little idols and these poles and all these things that become the idol. Like, you know, you walk up and you see the statue to some god that looks like, you know, somebody from their culture, and they would carve it out of wood. They would create this deal where they would chip away at it, or they would carve it out of granite or whatever it was, and they'd create this statue, or they had these poles. They were called Asherah poles, that would be these big, almost a totem pole looking thing, and they would come and they would worship. But the issue of worship was not that they really believed that the idol, the statue, the pole was God. It was an avenue to worship the God who was going to take care of those inner needs, those inner struggles, those inner fears. The God who was going to protect them and deal with those and help them out with those. And so they created something because they felt like if I don't have something tangible, something I can touch and see and feel and know that will help me to get to there, how do I know if I'm really reaching out to that God, and how do I know if that God is hearing me? And they would create tangible things. And so they would create idols. They would create these idols to the God that would deal with their inner turmoil and struggle. And these idols became a tangible thing from the created order, a tangible way to worship. It became an avenue of worship to get to the God that they had created to deal with their need. And what God's saying is, listen, when he says no other gods, he's saying, listen, in a very real inner way, you have things that you will exalt to the place of most important. And then you will create tangible, physical ways in your life to pursue that, to worship that God. And so you have a teenage girl who is longing for acceptance, who gives herself away to a guy just so that she can feel like somebody cares. You have people who buy, you know, all this stuff and you know, the best car, and we as Americans overspend daily to create idols, to worship the things that are thinking that those idols will become avenues of worship to fill the deep longings of our heart. And we create tangible ways for this to happen. And those become our idols. They become avenues to worship the gods that we create. Now we're not quite so sophisticated, or maybe we're more sophisticated, whatever you want to call it, where we start putting names and labels on the gods. But we all in here, I hope this is kind of really making sense to you. Because every one of us in here have these inner needs and struggles and hurts and fears that we place on the top of the pole all the time, and then we create avenues of worship to get there. And what God is saying is, I am not worshiped when that is. Because the flow of my life will move toward what I really value. What is most important? What is of supreme value? The flow of my life is going to go to that. It's going to go to pursuing that, to making that exalted in my life. And worship is when I come back and I realize that this is who I am. My heart's an idol factory. I make gods all the time. The default mode of my heart is idolatry. Not creating little statues, but creating avenues of worship that get me to a God of the internal me. And all of a sudden I end up in the lazy river again. Just keep coming back to myself. This flow is just back to me, and it's going nowhere. And what God is trying to tell his people, he's not just saying, hey, listen, don't like worship the sun god and the moon god and don't make statues. What he is saying is, I am God, the flow of your life to me. When that happens, the worship of God, the rest of life will fall into place. But man, there's stuff everywhere that's pulling me to worship. Trying to pull the flow of my life away from those things. And so, as we do that, what happens is that I am drawn to these things. And what I want to do for the next few minutes is tell you, how do you know what are the idols in your life? How do you know what are the gods? What are the things that test you? And you can know this. Here's what worship is defined by. I'm going to give you three things real quick that I think these are actually biblical ideas that where the Bible uses these ideas to point to what happens with our relationship with God, but it also points to the other things we tend to put on our pole, to put on the top of our column. And worship is defined, first of all, by the things that we give glory to. There is glory to our worship, glory to our flow, glory to our pursuit, glory to that which we exalt. Glory, what I mean by this is there's an organizing center of life, and there's almost a burning passion for certain things. And that organizing center, that burning passion, I will honor that thing above all else. It is the treasure. It is the experience for me that is preeminent. And what happens in all this is that there is a sense which my life gives glory to something. And as my life gives glory to that thing, I literally will bow down to him. Look at verse 5. He says in verse 5, talking about the idols, "You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." How do you like that jealous God thing? I mean, we look at that and we kind of, you know, sometimes that's a hard one to make because we kind of picture God as a... Wow. That doesn't happen every day. We see God is almost this teenage girl who's got like a boyfriend and who's sitting in the hallway writing notes going, "I can't believe he was looking at that other girl. How dare he?" You know, and you know, this jealousy thing, we're like, how do I deal with God who is a jealous God? But let me tell you, jealousy, we tend to see it as a purely negative emotion. Jealousy can be, but a husband who jealously loves his wife, I'm not talking about being jealous. I'm talking about a husband who is so passionately in love with his wife that he literally is willing to intercede if there's anything in her that is feeling like it's going to stray. A jealous wife who is loving on her husband but doing it in such a way that says, "Listen, be careful what you watch, look at on the internet." That's a good, healthy jealousy. Now, that can turn into all kinds of things. It's sinful. And God, it's never sinful. But when we look at God and his jealousy, it means that God loves us with such a passionate love, and he sees how all these idols, these gods, these things that they will affect our heart and lead to deeper brokenness. It will lead to a cul-de-sac in our life that we can't get out of. And when God tells us he's a jealous God, he is saying, "I love you with such a deep love that I don't want you pursuing anything but me, because I'm the only thing in your life that will make it work, that will make sense. I'm the only thing in your life that really is of that kind of value that the flow of your life ought to flow to." And so it says God is a jealous God, and it talks here, it says, talking about the idols, "You shall not bow down to them." In the Bible, one of the most common words for worship is the idea of bowing down, of falling to your face before something. It's used in both the Old and New Testament to talk about worshiping other things. It's used in reference to sometimes how people would approach a king, but it's also used in reference to the way we come before God, that we literally bow down, we fall on our face before him, we see him exalted and high, and there is a submission, a trust, a giving glory in our life to the thing that we value the most. And he tells them, listen, don't bow down to those idols. Don't fall on your face before them and give them the place of glory. That is reserved for God. And see, our goal here is to help you continue to see that we tend to bow down to all these other things. We tend to give the place of prominence, that we tend to put in our lives things that steal from the glory of God, and we give glory to those things. It's like a little kid who jumps on the tram at Disney World. You know, he's riding around and mom and dad, and that train is cool. It's really awesome to ride on that train. If you've never been there, they got those big old long trains that go all over Disney World, and it's a cool experience. But then the train rides over and it's time to go into the Magic Kingdom, and mom and dad grab the hand of the kid, and the kid is screaming and crying and kicking and clawing because he wants to stay on the train. The train has been this really cool experience, and what mom and dad want them to see is, listen, the train was fine. Mickey's right there. There's a castle. Cinderella's around the corner. You don't quite get what you're missing. The train is fine, but it's not what we bow down to. We need to get to Disney World. That's why we're here. And this is what happens in our life. We're living on the train of idolatry, and God is saying, I'm here. I'm here. Worship me. Let the flow of your life move towards me. I am the thing of value. And we're stuck on the train kicking and screaming because we don't want to get off the train. And the object of glory in our life, the centering, the thing that our life is bound to, demonstrates the object of our worship. You know, in the old days, they would build shrines to it. We're a little more sophisticated. We don't have shrines. We have magazine stands where you can go and take the God of your choice and find that God, find a manual on how to create idols of worship that will get you to your God. So we have Men's Fitness with Josh Beckett. Baseball, that's a good thing. And it tells you the 30 power workout to burn more calories and rip your abs. Ain't gonna happen in 30 minutes a day for me. But anyway, jacked and cut. And if your God is being a chiseled, butch, manly man, you can pick up the manual that tells you how to build idols and how to create avenues of worship for your body and to get you there. And you know, it even has Josh Beckett on the cover, so it's talking about baseball, so that's even better. Or if you're a teenager and it's all about fitting in and being like everybody else and knowing what's hot, you could pick up Tiger Beat, the great magazine that every one of us remember some girl reading and wondering why. But anyway, and in this you can see about all these Jonas Brothers and, of course, Zach from High School Musical. Oh, that is so sad. That we just... Tiger Beat for those people. For some of you ladies who now have, your housewives that you've kind of created that, you know, your home and feeling good about your home, is we have Ladies Home Journal. And at the top, every issue, I think, has this as the number one thing. Got stress? 50 fun, fast fixes. If you will just create these 50 avenues in your life, you could fix the stress in your life. How-to manuals to create idols to deal with the false gods in my life that God is the answer to. And nothing wrong with these magazines. Don't hear me go around and go, oh, Mike said no, buy magazines. They're all evil. They're not. No, but what I'm saying is we create idols everywhere. We create avenues of worship to deal with the inner needs and fears of my heart, ways to overcome them. And so for guys like me, there's Missouri Game and Fish. Because the idol of my heart sometimes is at the end of a lure or down the side of a gun. And so I have all kinds of how-tos to create avenues of worship to fill the inner desire of my heart to be a manly man. Because real men at some point in time kill their own meat. Ugh. And just in case I'm not 100% sure, there is the great magazine, All You. All You. This one says, blast your belly fat. I'm not reading that. It just frustrates me. How to make the great Easter eggs for the Easter bunny coming. Whip up sweet treats for Easter. I love this. Right across, two articles. One here, one here. Blast your belly fat, how to make great Easter treats, sweet Easter treats for Easter. If I read both, will it balance out? I could have bought 1,000 magazines that are all the same. They take something that is an inner drive of the human heart and gives you a how-to manual to deal with that issue. God's idols. And I give glory to whatever it is my heart is striving for and seeking the most. And once I give glory to that thing, Then the next thing is that there's a dedication. I dedicate myself to that. I commit myself to the cause. I buy the bumper sticker. I get the t-shirt. I join the blog spot. I get involved. I label myself, because now that which I glory in becomes the cause which my life rallies around. And there's a dedication to that. And then there's sacrifice. There's literally me giving my time, my talents, my treasures, my all to that which I think will fill my heart. And there's sacrifice to it. In the text here, it says, you shall not bow down to them or serve them. The word serve, it's not like I'm coming up as a waiter with, you know, a tray going, hey, here's, you know, your hot chocolate and your coffee and your desserts. Serve is my work. It's the toil that I do and the cause for which I do it. It's sacrifice. It's taking my work and dedicating it, doing it for that which I have exalted as my God, which is the second most common word for worship in the Bible. Amazing, where the first and second most common words for worship in the Bible have nothing to do with what you do here on Sunday morning. They have everything to do with the flow of life. What do you fall before and what do you work for? That's what you worship. And there is a sacrifice. In that culture, they literally sacrificed their children to their gods, hoping that if they would kill their children to the gods would take care of these struggles and needs and sin reign. And God says, don't have idols. Don't worship other gods. Don't sacrifice to them. Don't give glory to them. Don't honor them. Give glory to me. Worship me. Let the flow of your lips, the flow of your life show that I am the thing of most value. I'm going to tell you how this works in my life. One of my inner gods, in a very real way, is the God of approval. I like people to like me. I like people to think I'm cool, I'm funny, I'm an expert. I'm teaching a class at Missouri Baptist University, teaching a New Testament class, and I see this coming out all the time because I'm always, you know, I'm the teacher, so I got to be tough and I got to be mean, but I always go, but you like me, don't you? I mean, I'm literally, they're going, this is too much work, and part of me is going, suck it up and deal with this. This is a college class. Part of me is going, but if I say that, you guys won't think I'm cool, and I want you to like me and think I'm cool, because maybe if you think I'm cool, you'll think God is cool. I mean, I kind of created this game in my mind. And so I do this all the time. I find myself creating avenues of worship where people will give me approval. They will fill the need of my heart. And so I will do things that I put a little spiritual bent on them, hoping that people will see me do them and they'll say, oh, Mike, you were cool. That was wonderful. I tell you, I get up here every week and I leave, and there is part of me that this very easily becomes an idol, because I am really looking forward to hearing somebody going, oh, that was the coolest thing. I cried for a week when you preached that one message. Approval. And often I value my worth and my goodness and my hope on how much people like me, how cool they think I am, how wonderful they think I am. And so I go home and I ask my wife, and I'm like, how was the sermon? She's like, I'm shot for a week. Because she becomes an idol, an avenue to get what I'm seeking. Let me give you a fictional. This is fictional, but a story one of us seen. Here's this girl who's in her 20s, and she has not found a guy. She's tried, maybe dated a few times, and she is set up in her mind that being loved is the ultimate. And so she jumps on several chat rooms. She gets on an online dating community. She starts setting up avenues. She goes to bars and hangs out and all this kind of stuff, just so she can find somebody who can pour that into her life, thinking, if I just get that, I'll deal with the problems. She finds a guy. He's good looking. Doesn't have to be too good looking, because right now I just need to be loved, but he's all right. You know, those cross-eyed and the weird nose thing doesn't bother her a whole lot. And so she starts seeing the guy, hanging out with him. And as he gets close to her and she gets close to him, she begins to have sex with him. She begins to give herself away. The guy has been an idol. Now sex is an idol because she feels like if I just do this with them, I will feel loved and he will give that love into my life. He proposes and then all of a sudden the proposal is an avenue to fill that issue. And so now we're working towards the marriage and the marriage, the wedding becomes this massive idol. If I can just get to the point where I'm married, my heart will be filled. And they get to the marriage and what happens every point of the way, every point along the road, the idols that I set up in my heart that I think will fill the inner pain and toil and struggle and need are never enough. And all of a sudden, this couple's married for 10 years, and a guy just is, I mean, he's working, he's busy. Life is not what she dreamed of. And all these idols don't work. And here's the thing. In the text, he says, don't make idols from the created order. He talks about things in heaven, things on earth, and things in the water under the earth. He's talking about all the created order. Here's what God said about every one of those things. It's connected to Genesis chapter 1, where God creates heaven, earth, everything, the water, everything in it. And at every point in time, he says, it is good. But an idol is when I take something that is good and make it great. We put up all these things, and other than the marijuana leaf, there was nothing wrong with anything that was on the screen in that video. But it's all part of the created order. It will never fill the need. God is the only thing that will do that. When I take something that is good, I put it on the totem or on the top of my column here and make that the thing of most important, thinking it will fill these inner needs of my heart and these fears that I have. I end up with an idol. And here's what the flow of my life ought to look like. Not a lazy river. It ought to look like a river that is emptying into an ocean. That the flow of my life is flowing into something that is vast and great. And have you ever stood where a river empties into the ocean? And you see it, and you're like, wow, this is huge. And you're wowed at the flow. In a very real way, the river is living out what its purpose is. But it never really adds anything to the ocean. The ocean is great in and of itself. And that's our worship. The flow of our life and lips to that which we value the most. And so what we're going to do this morning is we kind of close the service or kind of close this section. Bands will come out in just a minute, but we got people who are going to hand you out a card. They're going to walk up. They're actually going to give you a card that says, what matters to you? On the back of this card are a series of questions. What am I most afraid of? What do I long for the most passionately? Where do I run for comfort? I put anger. This is why we have horns on our cars. Maybe that's what you run to. That's not the only thing. There's a lot of things. You might run to, you know, Edie's ice cream. Where are people handing these out? Come on up. Start handing these out to everybody, okay? What do I complain the most about? What makes me the happiest? How do I explain myself to other people? What's caused me to be angry with God? What do I brag about? What do I want the most? What do I sacrifice the most for? What things take away my intimacy with my wife, my kids, with God? If I could change one thing in my life, what would it be? Whose approval am I seeking? What do I want to control, master, and bring under my dominion as a master? What comfort do I treasure the most? It's a little card. We've made this for you. To throw in your Bible, to throw in your back pocket, to throw on your refrigerator, whatever you want to do with it, is just some questions that will help you examine your gods and your idols. So what's the answer then? And here it is. The answer to my idols is Jesus. The fact that God himself became a man and died on the cross for your sin and for mine to reconnect us to our creator so that we could experience his greatness in a real way, in a relational way again. That's the good news. The good news is you're sitting here going, wow, he's right. I have all these idols. Listen, the human heart is an idol factory. Mine is, yours is. We flow towards something every day. Apart from Jesus, it will always be a lazy river. But Jesus died so that we can know God and the flow of our life could be to him, to bring glory to him. And that's when it works. All of life is worship. And this morning, I just want to encourage you to meet Jesus, to know him, to experience the cross. And so as part of our worship this morning, we're going to celebrate communion. The band's coming out right now. As they come out, we're going to sing. We're going to worship Jesus because through our singing, maybe we can be reminded that he is worthy of this flow of life. As we sing, listen, we can just sing songs. I get that. But the singing is hopefully bringing our minds back to the point where we see him, we experience him. And as we sing, the offering of our lips becomes part of that flow of our lives. As we're challenged with the gods and the idols that I have. And then we remember that by coming up and celebrating communion, that Jesus, the cross, is the answer. And so this morning, we're going to celebrate communion. The band, Nick's will come out here and the band's coming out. We're going to worship. We're going to sing. We're going to celebrate. We're going to remember that even in my own sin, my own idolatry, my needs, that Jesus is the answer, that God is the only thing that gives value that will make it work. And I'm going to spend a few minutes, and I hope you do too, seeing him exalted and experiencing his grace and calling me to put him back in the place where he belongs in my life. I'm going to pray. Nick's going to sing. Our service is going to be here. You can stand, and when God leads you to, if you're a follower of Jesus, you are welcome to come celebrate communion. Lord, we praise you and love you. I honor you today. I thank you for the reminder, at least in my life today and this week, that my heart is an idol factory. And I pray that I would celebrate you and worship you this morning. Thank you for your goodness and your grace. Thank you that you remind me that I'm like that little kid on the train kicking and screaming about the things here, and there's something so much better. Help me experience that today. In your name I pray.